Hi, everyone, and welcome to The Imperfectionist with me, half of Carla, the podcast where we celebrate the messy, the honest and the imperfect. This weekend, I actually managed to enjoy some of the sunshine with all of pretty much every single person in Ireland. We were all outside. We just seemed to like en masse just went out and everyone was just like, need to soak up the sunshine. So to anybody who, you know, is outside of Ireland, we managed to get a heat wave this weekend, which means we got 25 degrees, which I know seems ridiculously low, but for us, it's quite high. And we really enjoyed it when everybody just goes outside and wears as little clothes as humanly possible, except anybody who lives here who's from a different country. And you can see them all looking at all the Irish people going, what is on earth are they doing? But we did. We went off to Merrion Square, the whole family, the Nona and all. And we had a gorgeous day in Funtropolis, which was like a free event, which was really nice to see. And loads of families just having a good crack in the sunshine. And today it's back to normal and the weather is, you know, just a little overcast and everyone just seems to be a little bit down again. But, you know, sure, here I am talking about the weather once more. But today on The Imperfectionist, I am joined by Fiona Brennan. She is a clinical hypnotherapist, a best-selling author and an expert in anxiety, sleep and self-love. And in our chat, we spoke a lot about positivity, about self-love and how we can harness that power of our own mind. Fantastic conversation. So without further ado, here is my chat with Fiona Brennan.
Where are you?
I'm in Crete.
Excuse me.
I'm here for the summer. I'm working and living here.
Oh my God, that's just the best life. You're there all summer. And is this the first time you've done it or are you...
No, I've been kind of like, to be honest, I grew up in Greece as a child and I have a huge connection with it. So in the last year and a half, myself and my husband bought a house here on Crete. And we basically did this last summer for 3 months and we're doing it again this summer for 3 months. So it's amazing.
What's the temperature like there now?
Well, it just said that a heat warning came up. It's actually got really hot. But I love the heat. I'm very, like, a lot of people find it so hard, but I actually really like it. You know, I'm kind of,
yeah,
I find that it just suits the muscles in my body and I feel very free and relaxed and you can have long siestas and it's all manageable.
Yeah, I suppose it's like, it's a totally different way of life though, isn't it? It's not like, it's not like you are, you know, like having to go travel in a suit to an office in the middle of a city, you know, like that's exactly. Not fun, you know, but when you're like,
yes,
when you
that's it. We go to the sea, we have our, you know, air conditioning if we need it. Like we've got everything we need. So and like you say, the work is very, it's fluid. I think the word is fluid, Carla.
Yeah, I love that because actually my husband and I, like obviously we both work for us. Like I work for myself and he works for himself as well. And he's French. So we were like, so we've been thinking about, you know, in the long term future, like not the next couple of years, buying something in Brittany where he's from. So we can spend the summers there, learn the language, because otherwise it's just that funny language that Papa speaks, you know. So trying to get that, like being a bit more cultural in his life. So hopefully. So you've inspired me.
Yeah, we had a house in France for 10 years before, actually. So we had my son's, it was at the south of France.
Hopefully.
A little house in the village. And it was like, we did that for 10 years. And my son now has a huge connection. Like his French is amazing. He's just back from Montpellier and like has a great connection with France because of it. So it is possible, especially these days with the online, you know, you can do so much.
Exactly.
And
it's just totally different, a totally different way of living. And the food is just so much better and the quality of everything. And it's just like, a lot more fluid, as you were saying.
Like, yes. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's so lovely. I'm very envious, not jealous, just envious. I hope that one day that will be, I'll send you a message one day on the beach and be like, we did it, Fiona. We finally did it.
So yeah, absolutely. You will. Why not?
Fantastic. Fiona, thank you so much for joining me. And I really appreciate you calling in, dialing in from Crete today. One of the things I always love to ask my guests first, just to kind of get to know you a little bit, is like, what's one thing that you used to tell yourself that you now know not to be true?
Wow.
Yeah, I like to start off with the heavy hitters.
You're right. And it's a great question. I would say most repetitive negative thought that so many of us have, that I have seen in probably countless thousands of clients over the years. And it comes in different shapes and forms, Carla, but essentially it is that very quintessential, I am not good enough. And it can spring out in different ways, right? It can come out in, I couldn't do that because I'm not, talented enough, pretty enough, clever enough, whatever it might be. But there's a sort of sense of somehow being lesser than. And I would say that is what I was telling myself for many, many years. Like I say, coming in different masquerades. I think we don't necessarily say to ourselves, I am not good enough. We tend to put it in, we couch it into different terms in different ways. It could be about our body, it can be about our ability as a daughter, a mother, a friend. It can just come out in so many toxic ways that leaves us really, really depleted. So, I have transformed the relationship that I have with myself, like 360 degrees. Like yourself, Carla. There's that sense of knowing what it's like to live with the inner critic being very, very strong, and knowing how depleting that is, and how, life has enough challenges in of itself. But when you have that voice in your head that's so critical, life can become, just so draining and so exhausting that you really don't have the resources that you need to cope with the different challenges that are going to come. Because that's inevitable. That's part of being human.
It's so true. And there's so much that can, if you don't even realize that it's happening to you or that you're doing it. Like in my case, I didn't understand that this was something that's not okay. That, that critical voice, that, that's not an okay thing to have, that we don't have to live with that. It's not in a negative way, but I think a lot of us have a lack of self-awareness. And I know that sounds like a very damning term. But I think that we are so influenced by so many things around us that we are not really aware of who we are and what we want and what our likes and dislikes and our abilities are, because we are so influenced and by the narrative that other people feed into us. Would you say, Fiona, for yourself, like, what was it that you felt that you weren't good enough at?
Well, before I became a clinical hypnotherapist and went into this whole world of, writing books and running retreats and my whole The Positive Habit brand, essentially. But before I did this work, I was an actress for 10 years.
Oh, wow.
And I went straight from school into my leaving cert, like into seems like so long, like even saying the word leaving cert. My son is doing his next year, so it's a whole different ball game. But essentially, I went into drama school, and I suppose that's where the inner critic would have come in very, very strong, because it's such a competitive industry. But I was very, very driven. I am a very driven person in many ways. Like, I'm quite tenacious when it comes to something that I believe in. I would be, I work hard to sort of be true to what it is that I feel I can offer the world, if you like. And so I felt like I had this vocation to be an actress, and I felt, very driven, but the world didn't seem to match what I had hoped, if you like. So I was constantly being rejected. Like, I'm telling you now, it's the toughest thing in terms of your self-esteem, because especially when you're younger like that, I would have been leaving drama school 20, 21. It seems so much about the physique, about being how I looked. Was I pretty enough? Was my hair the right color? Was my, or why was that girl getting the jobs and not me? What was wrong with me? So questioning, doubting, and constantly having that kind of affirmed in the world, because you would go for jobs and you wouldn't get them, and you would just never hear back. You'd sort of lay your soul on the line, and you just wouldn't hear back. And that is, it's kind of the, it's what you sign up for, but it's almost like a metaphor for life, because life is like that anyway. It's just a sort of hot spot, if you like, in terms of that particular industry. And there's lots of industries that are like that, but essentially I was equating it so much to the physical. You know, I really did. Even though, of course, I knew that that talent was so important, but I always, if I didn't get a job, I would have put it down to not being probably pretty enough was the what I would have told myself. I'm not good looking enough. Do you know what I mean? If I was
Absolutely.
more modelly, I would have got that role if they're looking for someone. So that's a very like exhausting negative thing to have in your mind all the time, you know, especially at that age, you know, when you're very vulnerable and quite formative years, your early adulthood.
Very similar to that to myself is that I would have always felt that it was like it was the physical body. It wasn't, it kind of like it wasn't, I wasn't enough. I wasn't getting this because of this. This was the reason, that it was something to do with my body or the way I looked. So many of us do that. You've worked with thousands of people, I can imagine, over the years. And have you, like, even in when I ask this question to my guests, like, we're nearly at 30 episodes of this now. And one of the questions that one of the answers is, I'm not good enough. I'm not something enough, but fill in the blank enough. Why do you think that is, for so many of us, why is that a narrative that we live by?
Well, you've touched on it earlier, Carla. It is about conditioning. It's about our childhood in many ways, in terms of making assumptions about ourselves and equating whether it's the physical or whether it's some kind of form of achievement or some kind of condition, if you like, that you offer the world, and then that will then affirm to you that yes, you are enough. So it could be you grew up in a family that was very sporty, for example, and you know, if you were doing well and you were winning the cups and you know you were getting awards and stuff, then you would have felt, yes, I am valuable, I have worth. And then of course when you didn't, that might have been questioned in terms of your own self, not necessarily parents doing this intentionally. A lot of this is not intentional. And you know, when I'm working with clients, like I do believe that we need to understand our past, we need to process our past, but we don't want to dwell on them. You know, it's a case of really coming to peace. And even the word past, Carla, like it's almost like as if it's a negative word. You know what I mean? Oh, the past, like don't talk about the past, right? Do you find that like it's kind of bizarre? It's like, oh, well, I don't want to talk about my past, right? Okay. And
Yeah, it
anyone
seems
who
like this kind of
doesn't,
like dirty secret that
yeah,
we, that
exactly. Oh,
let's
don't
not
go
air our
there.
dirty
Like,
laundry.
yeah, not the past, please God. But like the past is like the present, right? In terms of there's all it's a huge mix of so many different things. There's going to be beautiful things from our childhood, and there's going to be really difficult, perhaps even traumatic things from our childhood. It's not necessarily one or the other. But the way that the brain works in terms of the negativity bias, it's going to sort of unfortunately and unintentionally it'll cling on to the negative, and it will sort of hold that in its forefrontal awareness, if you like. And when that happens, it becomes a trigger. It becomes something that we don't want to touch. It's like as if we're going to get burnt if we go there. And unfortunately, what happens is that it's like replaying out the old patterns. So whatever and however that belief started its foundations, it's like a seed. When was that planted? How was it planted? Why was it planted? In terms of, let's say, not being good enough. Once you start to understand that, you begin to move forward, like the Zen Buddhist monk Thich Nhat Hanh, who you know I really follow his work a lot. He would talk about how it's about understanding. Love is understanding. And when we understand something, we're in a strong position then to start to move forward and to release it. So I think, you know, when it comes to the past and understanding these things about ourselves, telling people to move on or let go, or you have, you know, it's not effective. It just isn't, because, you know, you might consciously want that, but you subconsciously are holding different beliefs and systems about yourself. And as a clinical hypnotherapist, a lot of my work is in the subconscious. So I see huge positive shifts, and it's very rewarding. It's very intense work, but it's incredibly rewarding because what I see is people going from having those kind of beliefs about themselves, whether it's I'm not good enough in a physical sense, or maybe in a more achievement sense, or even as a person in general, I'm just not good enough as a person. You see that transition, if you like. It's a transformation where the person begins to truly love and appreciate themselves for who they are as they are. And it's unconditional love. And we are now, as adults, we're in a really empowered position to actually supply ourselves with this continual flow of love that isn't dependent on external validation. And that's where really true transformation comes from, in terms of self-compassion, in terms of being kind to ourselves when we need it most. And it's so insidious, it's so subtle in terms of how hard people are on themselves, even with the training, even with the awareness, with mindfulness. It can slip in a very kind of almost like a slippery snake, it just comes in the back door almost. And I think we have to be really vigilant of how we're speaking to ourselves. And then, compassion is about understanding, and it's about insight. So when we make that breakthrough, okay, so I feel like this because, it could be my mom was so busy that she didn't have time to notice. It could be something. It's not necessarily like an awful big dark secret. It's just,
Everyone kind of has this opinion that like trauma can be, it has to be something like physical or sexual abuse. But there's also micro traumas, aren't there? Like there's these little things that happen to us, consistently that cause
Exactly.
these and cement these narratives.
Exactly. That's it. It's the chronic form of them that takes a place in terms of it's when it keeps on happening, you start to develop a belief. And once you have a belief, again, it's like the seed has taken root now. And so a lot of my work is helping people to kind of unravel that slowly and very, very gently. You've got to do this work, gently, because often I get asked, it's almost like the quick fix people are looking for, how quickly, how soon, how, and that in itself, if you just even take a moment to consider how, ineffective that is and how it actually creates the opposite, it prolongs any suffering or feelings that you don't want. They linger. Because if you think a good way to consider it is if one of your children was upset and you say to them, well, how long are you going to be upset for? Like, how long?
It
When
seems
is
so
this going to
ridiculous,
end?
doesn't it?
It does.
Like you
How
stop
quickly can
crying
we get
now.
through
Like
this?
like let's we're fi you're fixed now, like that's
Take a
so
deep breath and you're
true.
fixed. Yeah.
That's so true. I would never have thought about it. It's because we always say, like talk to yourself as you would to a friend. But we all like obviously, like a lot of the work that I do is in weight loss, and a lot of people want that quick fix. They want it like immediately. But how long did it take to get to the position that we're in, that we want to lose weight? You're not going to lose it in, 5 weeks, and it's a lot of more work than just, there's a lot of this kind of work that not just the conscious work, it's the subconscious. And I think that that's, I love the way you speak about that because it's so important that we understand that we act on different levels. We have, like our prefrontal cortex making actual decisions, and then there's, the inner child in us making other decisions, the subconscious things that influence us. And it's fascinating. I could imagine the stories and things that you've learned through your career is so rewarding. Like to maybe probably one of the best things to do is maybe like if to ask you, like, if you met somebody at a dinner party and they asked you, like, what do you do? Because we haven't actually asked you, what is it that you do, Fiona? Like, how would you answer? Like, what would you say to them? And it's
Well,
probably a lot longer than one the
do
one
you know
thing
what? To
to
put it really simply, right? I got a taxi recently here. I was running a retreat, and the group had gone into the Hanya, which is a beautiful sort of city near us. And I came home to have a rest because I knew that I wanted the energy for the evening. And I ordered a taxi, and the taxi guy, the Greeks are the most friendly people. I'm in Crete, so the Greeks are always so chit chatty and they're lovely. But I got the vibe this guy didn't really want to talk. And I was quite happy to just have a bit of space because I was going to, be doing a lot of chatting and socializing with my group. And so I was just sitting there and kind of looking at it's so beautiful here in the mountains and the sea. And I'm just there. And then I could see him kind of looking at me. And then I speak a little bit of Greek. So he was like, "Oh, you Milady Lenika, you speak Greek." I said, "Yeah, a little bit." And then I just couldn't shut him up, right? So he said to me the very question, right? What do you do? And the way I described it, because I was trying to be really clear, especially with it, the language and everything. So I said, "I help people to feel happier." And he said, "Wow," he said, "this is a great job. You had, oh, I didn't know this was a job. You help people to feel happier." I said, "Yeah." I said, "That's actually what I do."
That is a
So,
phenomenal way of putting it. Because
yeah.
that is
And I
what
just
you
thought,
do.
that is what I do. And like it comes in different forms. It comes in all the different, platforms, whether it's a book or an online course or a retreat or a one-to-one session. There's all different ways of making people happy and to access them in a way that works for them. But essentially, like that is it. When somebody comes to me in whatever way, again, they pick up a book, they, whatever way they come to me, they're coming because there's something inside them that is suffering and they want to feel better. They want to feel more content, calmer. They want to have better relationships. They want to feel better about themselves, physically, emotionally, every way. And my intention is always to help them to feel happier. And how I do that, again, it depends very much. It's a unique, it's quite a subjective thing. You've got to work with, especially one-to-one, you've got to work with who's there and how to help them. Because what works for one person doesn't necessarily work for another. And you've got to find a way that connects. And so I will always go to the heart as a way to connect. So for me, it's about heart energy. It's about that intention of knowing that if I hold that intention clear in my own heart, I'm here to help you to feel happier, to put it really simply, like kind of childish language, but essentially one that the subconscious can relate to. It likes things to be very simple, clear, and it doesn't have a sense of humor. When you start joking with it, it's like, what do you mean? It's like a child. It doesn't quite understand. Yeah. So
Doesn't
kind
understand sarcasm. It doesn't understand when we're trying to be
no,
funny.
oh God, no. It's like, again, with a child, if you say something, they go, what do you mean I'm silly? Or, you're,
Yeah, and they're
no,
gonna take it literally.
yeah, exactly, Carly. Yeah. So the heart has a pure, clear energy that I feel is the best in terms of helping people to move away from the busy brain, which is like a, it can be like a washing machine. It can be like a factory that doesn't stop. The motorway can be so busy, and you want to help people to sort of literally kind of melt down into the heart. And the heart is always here. The heart is always present. The heart is now, and it's connected. It's like this strong anchor into love, into unconditional love. So much of my work is helping people to do that for themselves. And then what is amazing then is how that then trans, it's all about how does that help the people around them. So when you help one person, you actually help also their partners, their children, their friends, their parents. It spreads out. It's the ripple effect. Hence the positive habit. It's the idea of that positivity spreading through to everyone that they encounter.
It's a, like I always talk about like the cycle of inspiration, and it's like somebody inspires you and you see that positive light within
Yes.
them and you kind of
Yeah.
feel that energy from them. We can either be like, oh no, I'm not ready for this,
Yeah.
or we can take inspiration from it and want to improve ourselves and feel from it. But that's such a the positive habit, like feeling that this like ripples through, because it really does. Like when I know for myself, like when I was, living in the midst of food addiction and horrendous negative self-talk, my relationships with the people around me struggled. And then, but then when everything changed and I started to work through it, it was very painful and a long process. But then coming through it, my relationships, those who have survived that transition, are so full and so different, and therefore have also helped to change those people. Like we have better relations, like myself, my husband, we have a better relationship now because of the changes that I've made in my life, you know, not just like, I'm not saying it's all down to me, like, you know, but it's when we like, he's also done some serious heavy lifting in this, but it's so, I love this. I love the fact that we can influence those around us. It's not just for the benefit, because a lot of people will talk about self-development, self-improvement as almost this selfish act. Especially being Irish, we'll think like, oh, who's your one thing she is that she loves herself. But we had Claire McKenna on the podcast a while ago, and she was like, why is self-love such a dirty term? Surely it's something that we should be striving for. Isn't that like,
Absolutely. I
do you
love
feel that as
Claire,
well?
and yeah, a lot of love for Claire. And yeah, my second book is actually called Self, The Self-Love Habit. So I've written a lot about this. And yeah, I sort of absolutely got that kind of, not, I would say backlash is too strong a word, but maybe misunderstanding about what it is. So I'd always start interviews about the book with, you know, it is the most selfless thing you can do. So self-love is selfless, right? In terms of, you know, let's get this really clear from the start. You are loving yourself, not more or less than anybody else, but in an equal way, right? So you've got to have your needs met as much as anybody else's, right? So it's not like, well, once I'm okay, like that's a very sort of narrow view of it. It's actually the opposite, because it's like you said, Carla, when the energy is there, when there's a positive energy of really warmth and love towards yourself, it is a gift to everyone else, right? And predominantly it's a gift to your family, because they are the ones, like, let's face it, who see the best and the worst of us, right? They are the ones where we are, you know, really uninhibited in many ways. Like, we show ourselves more, you know, to our family than anyone else.
They get the
And
raw version of us. They the
we
not the
do.
not the public facing version. They get the raw version of us.
Exactly, Carly. Yes. So they are the ones who stand to benefit most from this, because a self-regulated parent or partner or sibling, whatever it might, the relationship in the family might be, is someone who is radiating a strength, you know, for the whole family, you know. My dad died just 7 months ago. So I'm talking like personally in terms of, you know, how the work that I've done, it's like a resource, like all of the years of this work that I've done for myself. I do feel like really, and I know because he told me it helped him go through you know, those last stages of life. And that is, like, as hard as that is, it's also something to be so, like, grateful for and so joyful for, that I was in a position to do that, and that he was so open to it and receptive to it. And I would even do sessions for him, Carl. Like, he was amazing. Like, he would, you know, because he was in a lot of pain, he'd say, "Sweetheart, will you do a little hypnotherapy?" And I'd say, "Of course I will. Of course I will." And it was just a joy to be able to share what I've developed personally, professionally, but to help develop to share it personally as well. So there's such a, I suppose, motivation for this work in terms of how it benefits you, yourself, but then when really difficult things arise in your life, you have, it's like money in the bank, you have the resource, you have the strength, and you have the resilience that you need. Not perfect, you know, because it's not about, like, perfection. Hence the title of your,
Hence the title.
oh, Carla, honestly, I think it's a great title, because that is the battle that I see so many in my clients over the years, is that seeking perfectionism, and, you know, within themselves, but also within relationships. And, you know, that's one thing my dad was very good at, was accepting me and my family for how we were. You know, so if we were tired, we were tired. If we were a bit narky, we were a bit narky. You know, there wasn't this sense of you have to be a certain way, you have to be happy, you have to be this. No, you just, you know, you must be tired because you've been working hard, pet, you know.
And that must be for him, that must have been something that made life easier for him as well. Because I think when we start to chase this idea of perfectionism instead of meeting people where they are, You're trying to control things that you can't control, and therefore adding stress to your own life.
Oh, 1,000%. Yeah, absolutely. It's this, it's it, I think acceptance is such a huge part of love.
For yourself as well, not just for those around you.
Yeah, absolutely. But it does start with the self, because when you accept something in yourself, you're much more able to do it for others. You know, if you accept that you have, a tendency to be envious, or a tendency to be, selfish, or whatever it might be that you find really hard in others, when you've accepted it in yourself, you're much more forgiving and able to be, to manage it within someone else.
That's probably where that I get the saying right, but that idea of, it's when you don't like somebody, it tends to be the thing that actually that you don't like in yourself is what's being reflected to you.
Oh, Carla, completely. I did a retreat once in Ireland on this, the shadow work, basically. So the dark shadow, and the golden shadow everybody loves, but the dark shadow people. It was exactly that. It was like, let's just look and see what it is that, somebody might say, oh, my mother-in-law drives me nuts. Like, going, well, what is it in particular? What do you find so hard? Well, she's so controlling. It's like, okay. And, gently guiding, and this would be work I've done with people, not directly, but like over years, kind of bringing them there and say, well, okay, do you see that might be in you? Absolutely not.
Yeah,
No, no,
definitely not. No
no,
way.
no,
Yeah, no,
no.
I'm perfect.
Yeah,
Yeah.
but it's once you get to happiness with that, then it isn't really a problem. You can put your head up high and say, yeah, I do. Like, I can feel jealousy. Like, it's not something I'm like about myself, but I know that it's there. And when it's there, and the more that I'm comfortable with it, the less I feel it. It's not a problem. I'm not ashamed of it. I'm not trying to hide it in
Yeah, when you
terms
stop
of,
fighting it.
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's very empowering.
You were an actress. That was like where you
Seems
started.
like a long time ago, and it is a long time ago. Yes.
It's an interesting transition between, acting and then
Yeah.
coming to hypnotherapy and mindset work. How did you find your way into that type of work? Because you said, acting was your calling. Would you find that this
Yes.
is now your calling?
100,000%. Yes. And I've been doing this now, oh, nearly 13 years, since I graduated in hypnotherapy. But essentially, yeah. The connections actually are quite strong, because first of all, within acting and that whole area of theatre and understanding characters, there is a deep desire to understand human nature and psychology. So I was always motivated by what is driving this person, why are they doing this, kind of intrigued and curious about people. So when you look at psychology, you can see, well, that's very connected. Another huge part of acting is the imagination, is that you have the ability to transform yourself into something else, right? You can become and create any type of character. And essentially, when we are transforming from, let's say, a place of suffering into a place of happiness, we are going on that journey. And what is the tool that brings us there? Well, quite often in hypnotherapy and subconscious work, it is the imagination. The imagination is so powerful. So if you can imagine yourself, feeling calmer, going into the meeting with your head up high, greeting your mother-in-law with politeness, and being able to manage the situations that once caused you so much stress and worry and anxiety, then you are beginning to transform. And the subconscious, it doesn't know the difference, right, between imagination and reality. So when you tell it that this is how it is, it will absorb that, and it will believe you. So we've got to understand how much power we actually have. I did a TEDx talk back in, God, 2017, I think it was, in Tala TEDx, and it's gone on to have a lot of views all over the world. And I talk about the subconscious power in that, as it's like your superpower. That you have this, why not use it? And what many people do, and it's again not intentional, nobody's fault, but they're using it in the opposite, right? So they're telling themselves that I'm not good enough, I'm depressed, I'm not able to do that, I'm too fearful, I'm too nervous, I can't do it, I can't do this, and I can't do that. And again, that's the imagination, it's not actually the reality. So your body begins to feel that, believe that, and you are changing your body for the good or the bad on a neurochemical level. Your biology is changing as a result. So our thoughts and our imagination are our currency in terms of how we manage them. And it's that training. And it's so funny, Carla, because like people always say, how? And you might have already told them three ways of how, right? But again, it's back to one of the things that I think is so important is accountability, right? Accountability to the how, accountability to taking the action of doing the meditation, of listening to the hypnotherapy, doing the yoga, whatever it is that you find your way, it's the habit of that creates the change. That's the how. It's like you find exactly what works for you, and then you start to implement that, and you are faithful to that, and you're devoted to that. And that is like the savings, it's the money in the bank. It's you have it there for yourself when you need it. And again, over the years, I've seen so many people make that transformation, feel amazing, and then drop all of the practices. No more meditation, no more hypnotherapy, no more yoga. Oh yeah, I'm fine now. I feel great. I feel so amazing. And they let those practices go. And of course, it's only a matter of time until the old default system will start to kind of get root in terms of neuroplasticity. The brain will start to go back into the old patterns of negativity. So we need the, I think the word devotion is better than discipline, because discipline is like school. So we have that
Harsh,
devotion to
rigid,
ourselves.
yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's implementation and it's accountability. Those are the two things that I feel, we all need to take that kind of responsibility for ourselves.
It's like it's kind of go down to like the power of consistency, isn't it? Like instead of just we all like it would be lovely to be able to go to the gym, once every week for 6 months and build up, a little bit of muscle and then, take a step away and it just retaining itself. But that's not reality. That's not what's going to happen if we do that. We need to be doing these things consistently because, I always talk about self-compassion as being a practice. It's not a constant. It's not, you don't decide to love yourself and then you just do for the rest of your life. It's something that you have to work on and continue those habits. And why is it you think, Fiona, like when you talk about the whatever the habits that bring us to feeling better, why is it as people do we stop them? When we feel better, why is it that we don't continue?
Because we're motivated by trying to avoid pain and suffering. So when we're in pain and suffering, we will do what we can. It's like a toothache. You'll do what you have to get it, the pain, to avoid the pain. When the pain's not there, we tend to forget. But I would say, to just go back a moment to what you were saying about it being, a practice rather than a constant, I would kind of say it's a bit of both. I think that we can have shifts, right? Where you develop a faith for in yourself, which is a love for yourself. That doesn't really change, right? Like it's a kind of strong sense of this inner anchor, if you like, or what I trained with Rick Hansen. I don't know if you know his work, but he's an American psychologist, and he's done some great work on positive neuroplasticity, etc. And he would talk about the unshakable core. And the unshakable core is something that's always there, right? It's, it can be in the heart, it can be in the gut, but it's something that is anchoring you. So I think that once you have that, yes, it is then becomes the maintenance of that. But it's not like it's a chore. It's not like, oh God, I have to do my meditation now, right? It's almost like this, like it's just a natural development of caring for and loving yourself. It's like this is actually what I it's like the body will bring you there once you've trained the body, whether it's to sleep well, eat well, meditate, whatever these positive lifestyle habits are, the body will bring you there if you get out of your own way, right? And that's the thoughts, that's the brain starting to take over. So we need to kind of, the more connected we are physically to ourselves, the more that the body, we can have this lovely trust with the body that, like I often joke, say, I'll find myself in a down dog, even if my brain says, oh, I don't feel like doing yoga. The next thing I know, my body is bringing me that to the mat, if you like, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And yeah, and I think a lot of us ignore our body. You know, we try and
Exactly.
drown it
Yes.
out as opposed
Yes.
to
Cut
honoring it.
off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the therapy that I did was sensory motor psychotherapy, so that connection between your body and your body
Brilliant.
remembering what you have forgotten, what the brain has forgotten, and going back into the body and grounding yourself and allowing yourself to be present in your body and listen to it, as opposed to being living out in the ether, not really understanding. And
Yeah.
how did you begin to become a clinical hypnotherapist then, Fiona? Like, what
Yeah,
was the
so I
transition for
basically
you?
what happened is I kind of on my own journey as you say, in terms of my I kind of moved away from the acting. My son was born and I was in a whole different kind of place, if you like. I'd fallen out of love with acting and I was like, I want to do something that genuinely makes a difference. And it's back to my dad actually, because he had been a smoker in his earlier life. He gave up when he was 40. But to help him give up, he listened to hypnosis CDs. And there was a surgeon in Meath, his name has escaped me right now, but a very well-known surgeon who was like a trained hypnotherapist as well. And people would go from all over Ireland to give up cigarettes with this guy. And my dad went to him and he would listen to his tapes. So I felt like this man had saved my dad, right? Because it was through those tapes that he was able to give up. So I think somewhere deep in my subconscious that stayed with me in terms of the power that that had to transform someone who was addicted to something to no longer being addicted. And so I looked up clinical hypnotherapy and I haven't, to be honest, I haven't really looked back since in terms of how it's just kind of grown so much. And even, you know, just it's like I think when you're doing the right thing in the world, it flows in the right way, you know. So it's never been a struggle. It's never been like, oh my God, you know, how will I get the clients? Or, you know, it's always been very fluid. And 4 years ago, my husband actually, he was working full time in local government and he left his job and he now works full time on the Positive Habit as well. So we were in a position to do that because, you know, he's always so supportive. Like he was always doing the IT stuff and finances for me and everything. And then we just decided, you know, in terms of lifestyle, in terms of being able to really give it everything that we want to, he made that jump and left his pensionable job, which, you know, certainly for my generation is like, you don't do that.
Yeah,
You
it's not
know.
something you do, yeah.
Yeah, but again, haven't looked back really, you know, in terms of how you feel like you're doing the right thing. And it's always growing and developing in different ways. But I think that it is a vocation, you know, as much as the acting was a vocation, it was one that I'm happy not to be doing now. Like there's no part of me at the moment. You never know the future. I never say never say never. Do you see me on some ad or something? But I don't think so.
You can do more than one thing anyway in
That's
life.
true, Carla.
Yeah, you
Yes,
don't
I
have to stick
can.
to the one. But for
Yeah.
people who wouldn't know what a clinical hypnotherapist is, like,
Yeah.
how would you describe it? Because I know there's a lot of,
Yeah.
miscommunication and misunderstanding about hypnotherapy and what it is. You know, it's like people
Yeah.
are reluctant to be like, to go under and come out like a chicken or some ridiculous thing like that. You know, like that's not what you're doing here. So how would you
No,
describe
no.
what that is to people who don't know?
Well, my whole journey with that has transformed as well over the years. In terms of when I first started, I was doing more of this quit smoking, weight loss type of therapy. And I realized quickly enough that wasn't my area of expertise. So I have my own kind of, I suppose, methodology, if you like, that my whole method that I've developed over the years. And I've also taken, you know, trained more in positive psychology, lifestyle medicine, positive neuroplasticity. So my, you know, I've been adding to it over the years. So hypnotherapy in of itself, right? It is essentially just a tool. It can't be more than that, right? And it is a tool that helps people to shut down their conscious mind. So I often say it is the most honest placebo you'll ever get. It's like you're not trying to pretend it's anything else but the power of your mind. And the way that I work now is that it's very sort of it's quite informal. Like if we were working together and you were telling me something, I might just say to you, Carla, just close your eyes there for a moment. And I might just count you down gently. It's not a big kind of like we're doing a session now and you have to get into this state. I would just try to help you kind of slowly relax a little bit. And then I would say, and I wonder, could it be this? And we might explore something. And then the subconscious will bring something that you consciously may not have been aware of. Or you might be more open to positive suggestions that your mind, if I'm saying to you, you are strong and capable, but your conscious mind saying, I'm not strong, I'm not capable. And then, and yeah, so it's essentially a tool, but what I believe and I know, no matter what kind of therapy you're doing, is that the most important thing is the connection. So it's like once you have that connection with the client, you can make progress. And once there's a feeling of trust and the relationship is strong, that's the most important thing. So for me, it has evolved over the years in terms of what hypnotherapy is. But I would do a lot of talk therapy. I would use positive psychology. So it's just one of the things that I use. But it is, I suppose, it's like the strongest tool in many ways that I have because the audios that I record, my books, my online courses, they basically are what keep the maintenance. So we might do a session together and then I'll say, okay, I want you to listen to this for like, a week and then this for a week and then that for a week. And people then follow that along. And what that does is it reinforces the message. So it's not just once. The subconscious works on repetition, so that's why affirmations are really good. That's why, just repeating the same thing has such power because when we, in terms of positivity, it needs to be embedded much more strongly when you go back to negativity bias.
And what kind of, when somebody comes to you, what kind of thing are they coming for? I'm sure they come for many different things, but what is it that obviously trying to be happier, but
Trying to be happier, yes, exactly, or wanting to be happier essentially. But like I said, I've moved away from the kind of more quick fix type thing. I want to quit smoking, I want to lose weight. Like what I would be looking at more is the relationship to the self. I would be looking, people come to me generally with chronic anxiety, stress, suffering from low self-esteem, not feeling good enough, having trouble with their relationships in terms of maybe their partners at work, not feeling confident. I do a lot of work with people in terms of really getting to the root of their self-worth, of how they value themselves, of their ability to communicate clearly, to be assertive without being confrontational. So yeah, that is negative, a sort of negative self-relationship, I would say, is the reason that most people, and that can come out in different forms. It can come out in maybe they are emotional eating and they come to me with that. But I'll always be clear, like, this is the way that I work, and I always want to make sure people know that, and if it's not for them, then that's absolutely fine. But I suppose I know enough at this stage that if you don't have the courage, and it does take courage to do the work, to go that little bit deeper, you're only ever going to stay on the surface. And unfortunately, you won't see the kind of the rewards that I want for people, if you like.
What would you say is one of the biggest transformations you've seen in one of your clients, if you can share
God,
it?
I'm going to sound so vain or so, like, well,
No,
I
but I
know,
think
but I have seen so many over the years, like,
it's.
I see them all the time, to be honest with you. Like, I am, God, what comes to mind? I suppose it'd be like, there's one case study, a client, I could say her, because she's in my last book, the Sleep Well book, and her name is Fionnuala. She's a musician, she's a world class musician, violinist, and she had trouble sleeping for 36 years of her life.
Oh my gosh.
And I met her in 2021 during the lockdown, one of the lockdowns. We went for a walk, and I remember her kind of again wanted the quick fix, hoping that I'd just be able to hypnotize her and she'd
Do
go to
one,
sleep
yeah,
for a while.
one meditation be sleeping.
Exactly. So we worked together, and I still see her for maintenance sessions. And she is phenomenal in terms of how she has transformed her relationship with herself. And she really took to the hypnotherapy audios. Like, she really embraced them, and she really is a amazing example of someone who was accountable to herself in terms of not just, once she was clear it wasn't a quick fix, she was committed to the process. And so now it's not perfect. She'll have nights where her sleep isn't great, but it's like literally 1,000 times better. So sleep is one area where you see people struggle with when, of course, there's the lifestyle factor, there's practical components, but there's also that deeper sense of what is going on underneath. And when you have the courage to do that work, then you will, your subconscious will feel safe. It's all about safety, and you'll sleep better. So she's one that comes to mind, but there are many of my clients over the years who I've seen. And of course, not all of them. Some of them will come and, maybe I can't help them, and maybe it's me, or the dynamic, or they're just not ready, and then that's okay too. It's all about working with what you have.
And that was that client that you had for now, was she part of your the reason that you went further into sleep, like as your latest book is focusing on sleep, and or was that just something you've always been so interested in?
Well, it's really funny. Oh my God. Because when I first started the sleep book, my son, he said to me, "Mom, you don't know anything about sleep." And I said, "Yes, I do, Luca." Right? I said, I do actually." He was right. I thought myself, okay, the kids can see things so clearly. He's like, "But you're like a sleep scientist." And I was like, "Yeah, I know, but I know loads about it." Right? I nearly killed myself in terms of research. I spent 2 years researching it, but the reason that it came about was because of the feedback from clients who said, "You've helped me sleep so much better. I can't." And they weren't coming to me for sleep issues. They were like, "You've helped me sleep. Thank you, God." It was my audios, right, that helped people to sleep. It kind of sprung from there. And then I just had to develop a whole program and do a huge amount of research into the science of sleep. And I did that. And it's helping lots of people, but it's also, my sleep has gone from what I thought was good to being amazing. So I've learned a lot on the journey, and it's all good.
Because I think a lot of us don't really understand the importance of sleep. Like it's kind of seen as something lazy, like rest for many of us. It's seen as this kind of, oh, we shouldn't need to spend that much time doing this, or I only slept 4 hours or something like that. And it's, but it's so vital for our well-being in every facet of our being.
It's the foundation. And especially for emotional regulation. So if a client comes suffering from anxiety, I need to know how they're sleeping before I can really help them, because otherwise it's like literally you're just banging your head off a wall, because you're going to feel, yourself, Carly, you feel so much more anxious and emotionally dysregulated when you haven't slept well. So, that is the foundation, and from there you can build.
Yeah, we have a closing tradition on the podcast where we spin our little Rolodex here, and we do a couple of quick fire questions. So I'm going to spin it. You tell me when to stop, and
Cool.
I'll ask you a question.
Okay, sounds like fun.
So tell me when you want to stop. What's
Stop.
the first thing that you do in the morning?
I breathe and say thank you for this beautiful new day.
Oh, it's lovely. Every morning, that's such a beautiful way to wake up. All right, we go for another one. Tell me when to
Sorry,
stop.
stop. Oh my
What's a book recommendation that you think everyone should read, besides your own, of course?
God. Oh, of course.
Of course.
Deepak Chopra's The 7 Spiritual Laws of Success.
Oh, okay. I've never actually read that. I will definitely be reading that. That's going on the list. Thanks very much. We'll go for maybe one more.
Stop.
What's one word your friends would use to describe you?
Fun.
Fun. That's fantastic. That's a really nice
I,
one.
it's a hard question to answer, because they need to answer it, but I would hope that they would say fun, because
That's a lovely one. Fiona, what's next for you? What's happening? What's coming up? What can people look out for?
Well, I've got my course, Light Up Your World, is open for registrations until July 18th. I'm also doing some public speaking courses in the autumn. And yeah, you can find out more about me, I suppose, on my Instagram. I have a summer affirmational challenge I'm doing every day on Instagram, which is really good. Repetition and, just to engage with it. And then my website, thepositivehabit.com.
Fiona, thank you so much for joining us and sharing so much of your wisdom. I think I could have asked you about 100,000 more questions, but you've been fantastic. So thank you for sharing so much about your life and about how we think and the importance of our subconscious and what we can do to help us. So thank you so much, Fiona, for joining me
My
again.
pleasure. It's so lovely to meet you.
Thank you so much, guys, and to Fiona for joining me and sharing so much. I loved the way Fiona talked about like how self-love is selfless. We talked a lot about that with Claire McKenna a good few episodes ago, where like self-love is kind of this dirty term, like it's something that we shouldn't celebrate. It's something that we, like, who does she think she is to love herself? But actually, it's a gift to everyone around you. It's not a self-centered act at all. And Fiona just reaffirms that thought that like, self-love is for not just for us, but it radiates to everybody else. And you know, the positive habit, the like her whole ethos and her program and how she works and how that ripples out to everybody around you. It's just like you become kind of this like positive person, and it just kind of just like the butterfly effect, basically. So make sure you give Fiona a follow, and if you've enjoyed that, make sure you hit the follow button on this podcast as well, on The Imperfectionist. Leave a review and share it with somebody today. Follow us on Instagram at The Imperfectionist Pod, where you can also send us a DM. And until next time, guys, keep showing up for yourselves.